Hi everyone, welcome to your Monday's favorite Dharma discussion, Dharma Hadaya. So, as you all know, we just take up a particular topic for each discussion, but today we thought we'll just talk about Buddhism in general. Though it's a general topic, it's going to be very, very important, and we have invited a duo. A popular duo of the who often comes to our studio, who often comes to this Dharma Hadaya discussion. Let me introduce them to you. First of all, I would like to introduce Professor Ravi Koggalege, former Deputy Vice Chancellor Academic of Sir John Kothalawala Defence University. He's an engineer and a meditation teacher with overseas experience. And I also have Mr. Vipula Vanigasekara, former diplomat officer, currently attached to Sri Lanka Tourism. He's a lecturer in marketing, and I would also call him a meditation teacher who targets foreigners, because he's, as of course it's understood, he's from Sri Lanka Tourism. So since we're having both meditation teachers, since we are going to discuss something in general, let me start like this. First of all, I warmly welcome both of you gentlemen. And first of all, I would like to ask Mr. Vipula Vanigasekara, sir, how would you describe Buddhism? I just asked this they would think easy question, because I thought I should ask this, because it's not only Buddhists who watch this channel. Lots of people all over the world watch this. So, therefore, I thought it's an important question, though it seems easy to all our Buddhists out there. How would you describe Buddhism?
Yes, Buddhism is described through several definitions. Often, they call Buddhism a philosophy, and some call it a way of life, and others identify Buddhism as a way out of suffering or finding liberation. So there are so many ways of identifying Buddhism. Probably the most appropriate description, I believe, is a philosophy, because the definition of philosophy is a study of the nature of existence. So it is very, very close. But I don't know if any of those definitions can appropriately describe what Buddhism is all about. But as a philosophy, I would again say that end of suffering or way out of suffering would be very, very appropriate, because if you answer anyone who is questioning why Buddhism, then naturally someone will say, well, what the Lord Buddha said was that what I have discovered is a way out of suffering, and therefore there is a need or a reason for the mankind to look at Buddhism as a vehicle to get out of this samsaric process, which is of course full of suffering.
Professor, how would you describe
Yes, I think Vipula has covered almost all categories, like philosophers. Then, of course, world level we have scientists and other thinkers. But how I see it is there are two levels of definitions. One is worldly level. So worldly level, there can be so
the
many definitions.
Mundane level.
So, yeah, there we encounter so many, you know, different views, arguments, and some call this is, you know, scientists more biased or based on materialism. But philosophers go a little bit far from there, so it's also called idealism as well. But Buddhism does not, fall into any of those, but somewhere in between. Even we can't say it is in between, because once in Buddha mentioned in one of the suttas, I think this Kacchayanagotta Sutta. So for the Kacchayana, he has mentioned there are two common drushtis or views in worldly. One is the something existing. It's known as Shaswata. Yes. Another one
eternal
is
existence. Is it
eternal or even
or then, just existence itself?
Yeah, just existence.
Okay.
So you can tell it is there.
Right.
And another one is non-existing. Succheda. So nothing existing or something like that. So those are the two extremes, and there are so many views, maybe combinations, so in between those things. Of course, in Buddhist literature, we found even the suttas, there are 62 different views during that time. They are mentioned in Brahmajala Sutta. So those can be in those extremes, so combinations, so non-belongs to any of those, so like that, different views, but Buddha clearly rejected all those, especially those Shaswata and Uccheda, right, existing or non-existing, but his teaching based on something called Paticchasamuppada, so it will not
cause
fall
and
into
effect.
Any of this, it's cause and effect principle, but something beyond that as well when you call Paticchasamuppanna. So whatever way we try to define it, that is how one situation Buddha has defined it. Yes. And that Brahmajala Sutta also, he has rejected each of those 62 views, giving a reason, right?
Okay.
So they are also, one can try to find what Buddha is trying to say.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Now you happen to talk about these 62 views, or what we call the Satamithya Dushti, the 62 views during the time of Lord Buddha himself, and you happen to say that he rejected all of them. Now, what about the Now, let us keep those 62 views aside, and if we talk about the current situation, about the other religions that exist in the world, so I don't know whether some of them are continuations from these 62 views of the ancient time, most probably. How do you see the significance of Buddhism? Is it that two levels that you spoke of, the mundane and the...
Yes. That's right. Mundane level, one might say all religions are same or heading to the same goal, because benefit for the society, something like that.
That's extracting the general
That is
teachings.
Also true, because in a way, all religions, they say avoid bad deeds and cultivate good deeds. So that is mundane level. So it's good for any society, of course, right? In Buddhism, there's five precepts, and so on. So they are acceptable for anyone in anyone wishing the society benefits of the society, right? But again, you have to consider it is mundane level, but if you really want to study or practice what Buddha has taught, then as Vipul has mentioned, there's a way to end all sorts of suffering. So that is something beyond worldly level views, I would say. So there's a clear difference, significant difference, Buddhism compared to all other religious teachings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, one major difference is like many religions, they believe a kind of super normal power, like God or Brahma.
Of a creator. Of a creation.
Maybe creator or a controller,
or
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Buddhism does not believe in such things. So that is one clear cut difference.
Mm-hmm.
And also the everlasting kind of being within us. Right? So Buddhism clearly reject that concept as well. So there's two things, how I, if you want to compare other religions with Buddhism. So, but those things come when we talked about supramundane level or the Lokottara side, not the worldly level or mundane.
Yeah, I would like to move on to Mr. Vanigasan.
Yeah, just to add to what Professor Ravi said, most of the other religions are faith-based. You know, you have to believe. And then whatever comes will come thereafter. The faith is the key in most of the other religions. Whereas Buddhism does not advocate a belief as such. And one has to discover oneself. You know, it is totally different that way. And the second significance, I would say that it is perhaps one philosophy that says, do not insult another religion. You know, Buddhism does not prevent anyone from having any faith, you know, so there is no conflict.
Hmm.
So that's why wherever there is Buddhism, there is no conflict with another religion. Whereas
I think Buddha never insulted any other religion,
exactly.
Especially those Shatshastras during that time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's
And I think he even visited them.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it depends on, it's a free will, it's your discretion, your prerogative, and anyone who is seeking something or the true nature of life, the reality of life, yes, here is a philosophy, but you have to find it yourself. So that's the second one. And third one, I would say, is that the Buddhism really tells you that you are your master, you know, and here are the
you
guidelines.
You are responsible.
Yeah, and here are the guidelines. And another one I would say is that it's Bahya Sutra, where Lord Buddha said, don't believe in anything, you know, unless you are convinced.
Kalam Sutra. Yes.
So, and so this, you know, the blind faith is not really encouraged in Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
So it is, there is some effort required by the truth seeker. So that is how I see the difference and the significance of Buddhism in relation to other religions.
Yeah. And Professor, now what about suffering? Because I don't know whether I'm correct, but is Buddhism the only religion speaking about suffering most people point at Buddhism saying that it talks about suffering?
Yes,
and,
especially we hear this from
accusing,
foreigners.
Accusing
yeah,
sort
yeah,
of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was in other countries, I used to, you know, hear this as
yeah.
well. And,
describe Buddhism
yeah.
as a pessimist
I remember
religion.
Once I attended one of the public seminars conducted by Ajahn Brahmavansu.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, he presented this Four Noble Truths in a different way. So we start with dukkha or the suffering, but he started with happiness in a different way. So he redefined it as happiness, cause of happiness, right?
Okay.
so start. Then he was telling. He took the third noble truth first. The nibbana is the happiness, according to his interpretation. Then path leading to the Nibbana is the fourth noble truth as the cause for happiness. Then he came back to first and second.
Okay.
the suffering and cause of suffering, the craving or tamna. Now, so Western world, we may have to address different way at the initial level, of course, right? So someone doesn't know anything about Buddhism or something. So he mentioned if he start to talk about suffering, they may not listen to other parts.
Yeah.
Because we should not forget Buddhism is, you know, not only talking about suffering, but cause of it and cessation of suffering and the path leading for that. So those are the very important things. So the problem is mostly foreigners, when they hear the suffering topic, they don't listen to other parts. That's why they get this kind of confusion. So Buddhism only talking about suffering, you know, it's a kind of negative thinking and so on, but that is due to lack of understanding of Buddhism.
Yeah. Yes. Moving on to Mr. Vipula. So, what do you think is Lord Buddha's core message to, I would say, mankind? Because he didn't preach to Buddhists, he preached to mankind.
Exactly. So, as Professor said, that it's suffering and we out of suffering. I would like to take a different viewpoint, just as much as I agree with Professor. Like, you know, you say you take the bull by the horns, you know. Because suffering, although it is a very strong, heavy word, it encompasses all kinds of suffering, the worries, the stress, anxiety, hatred, anger, and all that is suffering. And if you describe these types of suffering, you can always ask, have you not suffered or aren't you suffering? You can have everything in this world. You can have all the material things in this world. And yet you can see people, either they are angry or they are worried or they are, you know, they live with this suffering most of the time. And because they are always trying to live in the next moment, because this moment is always not enough or not good enough. And it's complete suffering. So if you thrash it out, this is what I do. I said, you take it or leave it. Suffering is the truth. It's everyone is going through this anxiety in life, because now the world is getting modernized, and people. That's why you need to go on an inward journey to find out whether you are actually happy, and to see most of the people are not happy, and that's a reality whether you like it or not. So therefore, I would say the core message of Lord Buddha is suffering and we are out of suffering. It's entirely up to them to ask themselves, you know, isn't this suffering? If the answer is yes, if there is some way of understanding, yes, there is suffering and there is no way out, that, you know, you might be happy for a moment, you know, and then it's like someone getting through an exam. You know, you study very hard and suddenly you hear that, you know, you have passed the examination, so you are very happy. But there's another way of describing that. It may be that stress that you have carried for many, many months, for years, it releases. You know, there is nothing extra coming as happiness. You know, maybe that. So I think if you look at the modern world today, this suffering is seen all over. Wherever you go, you can see, even when you are on the road, you can see the people, the way they are tooting the horn, because you can't even move an inch, you are still tooting. Why? There is anger in this.
Road rage,
I know, so that is also suffering.
Yeah.
So if you look at, you know, only the word suffering, you know, as Professor Ravi said, that people tend to think, okay, this is something negative, you know, we are looking for something positive. But I think, you know, telling someone, look, this is what it is, you ask yourself whether it is true or not. The same person will one day turn around and say, yes, you are right. Or probably you will realize in the latter stage of life, after looking back, it is true, I have achieved so many things in life, but I have gone through immense suffering. So that is where the message comes in. Here is the guideline to see whether there is a way out.
So is there anything you would like
to just to add a little bit now. Then there will be a question when we talk about happiness or suffering, how one define this, what is this? So worldly level, maybe one case may be a happy event for someone, but a sad event for another one. So it's a kind of relative thing. So worldly level, for example, just to clarify, if you have a car, one would may be very happy with the Maruti car.
Mm.
But another one, maybe, you know, not satisfied. Right?
Yes.
Same thing, right? So, so you can see wherever the happiness is a kind of relative thing. So again, that's a worldly level of seen at this. So Buddha mentioned, now those who are going in this samsaric journey known as Putajana, they are dukkhe ajnana. The dukkha is the suffering.
They are blind to suffering?
Yeah, they don't have the knowledge to understand what dukkha is.
Okay.
Dukkhe ajnana. Right? So, you know, many people, they heard the term dukkhe jnana, that is Buddha jnana. That is the kind of wisdom belongs to Buddha, but not us. Right? So Buddha has clearly mentioned these people, they are dukkhe ajnana. And also the first discourse, this Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, he clearly mentioned, I understood something not heard before. Pubbe ananusutesu dhammesu. And then mention these Four Noble Truths. So first one is the Dukkha Satya, Dukkhara Satya, right? So Pubbe ananusutesu dhammesu, referring to that as well. Not only to Nibbana, but the Dukkha as well.
Okay.
And he has given many similes as well to explain this.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, even to know what suffering is, you need to have a kind of wisdom. So Buddhism shows how to develop your wisdom, level of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on different levels of wisdom, how you see life, or the whether you are suffering or not. Right? Even a person doing wrong things might be happy with that. But it's a kind of level of wisdom they are having.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't even have the kind of wisdom to evaluate whether this is real happiness or not. So, in Buddhism, you need to develop wisdom to see things or understand.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Now, Mr. Vipula, is there anything that, now we talked about suffering and, you know, how one would define suffering. As a meditation teacher to mostly the foreigners, and I'm sure you know their ideas as well, as because they are not Buddhists by birth. But when we consider the Buddhists community, what would you say to them about their practices from your own experience?
I think I should ask Professor Ravi, because he's the authority on meditation.
Yeah.
But since I'm involved in conducting meditation sessions for foreigners, because I'm attached to the tourism authority, my approach is a little different, because it's a combination of samatha and then gradually moving on to vidarshana, or to go inside.
Mm-hmm.
And because initially you need a touch of samatha for them to calm down, settle down,
mm-hmm.
and in a position to concentrate. And then because it is a kind of a guided meditation, and that's what I do. And I believe in Buddhist philosophy there are over 40 types of meditation techniques.
Samatha.
So meditation. Yeah, that's right. Yes. So from anapanasati to kayakata. So you, the ideal situation is for someone to pick the right one. And that you have to have little bit of wisdom for that, you know, which kind of meditation that would suit oneself. Like, you know, you have these characteristics like kamachanda, vyapada, you know, people have these predominant characteristics. So ideally they should pick something which battles the the problem that one has.
That human weakness that one may be having.
Yeah, more than the weakness, it's very predominant, you know. Okay. Yeah. So, like some people, vyapada, you know, the one who is always, you
hatred.
Know, hatred and angry and shouting, it's suffering, you know, and he doesn't know that he's suffering. You have to have
that jnana to realize.
At least to realize, look,
said,
you know, I'm
that he's
I'm trying to release this, you know, by simply shouting at another one. So, ideally, this samatha provides this settling down, and that is necessary, and then moving on to vidarshana with some hard-hitting questions through the guided meditation. Mm-hmm. Now, for Buddhists who have studied these techniques, I suppose more than, you know, you must have some kind of a guidance and supervising, because, you know, otherwise things might go the wrong way. But there is a need for the meditator to continuously study himself. That's why I use this word inward journey, because in Vidarshana you are basically questioning yourself and analyzing your own existence. So therefore, the meditator must be absolutely sincere in what you do. And before you sit to meditate, you must ask yourself, what do I want from this? If it is just, I'm going to meditate for half an hour, 1 hour, and it's like another exercise, you know, I don't think that is the right
approach.
It will work out, you know. It's like going to a gym and doing a workout for 1 hour. I think meditation is totally different. So it's not like a classroom session. That's why the supervisor or the person who is conducting has to know the basic characteristics of the audience whom the meditation teacher is addressing, to pick the right one and then move on from there onwards. And then people come across enormous complications through this meditation. Now, one of the things that they often tell you is, I can't concentrate on anything. You know, the mind comes and takes me miles away. Which is a very common thing, you know, that is what the mind does anyway. And at least to know, if you can observe the behavior of your mind, your own mind, that itself is an achievement as a first step. So that's the way I move along with this meditation. But he's a thought,
yeah.
I'm sure you can add.
I'm sure Professor would like to add his.
Well, two things. One, when we talk to Buddhists, your first question, people
Buddhists,
have mentioned generally,
yeah.
But Buddhists, of course, as I mentioned, there are different levels. So everyone starts at, worldly level. So for example, Buddhists very often we see, you like to be, you know, next life go to heaven. Or Divya Loka or Brahma Loka. Or the Sukhatis, but not Satarapaya, Dukhatis. So that is their, you know, initial wish. I mean, when talking about beyond normal worldly level things, the social matters, but when we go beyond that, so most of them come to do, you know, acquire more merits, do good deeds. Why? Because when they die, they want to go to a good place, right? So that is the initial level. But it is not real Buddhism, actually. Because whether you hear Buddhism or not, you are going through this sansaric journey. And Buddha has mentioned, almost everyone we have, of us, we have born in even Brahma worlds, right? Yeah, but most of the time we spend in Dukkhatis. So whether you hear Buddhism or not, it is happening. But of course, you can accrue more merits and try to go to Sukhatis next life. But the point is, it's a temporary thing. So after that, what will happen? So Buddhism talks something more than that. How to end or escape from this samsaric journey.
Yeah. I think, just to interrupt you, I think most religions talk about that level, to
yes,
go to heaven.
That's right.
So I think Buddhism may be the only
yes,
religion who has,
yes,
says, points out beyond that.
Yeah, when we talk about religions which believe rebirth, they talk only about the next level. So whether
reunion,
you go to hell
God,
or go to Sugati, something called
heaven.
Swarga or
heaven, yeah,
or Brahman, whatever.
Yeah.
So many other religions also believe at least next existence, they talk about these two.
Yeah.
And there are certain teachings they don't believe something exists after death. So they talk about something else. There's a Bhautikavada kind of level, the Uccedavada.
Mm-hmm.
Then other religions, they talk about only the next birth. But Buddhism talk more than that. Even you go to heaven, that's not the end. Right? After the lifespan there, you can be reborn even in the Dugatis. So that's the danger. Right? So this is where so Vipula mentioned about two types of meditation, Samatha and Vipassana. The Vipassana deal with that point. But Samatha, it gives you a worldly level of kind of, satisfaction by just practicing this. So when the Vipula mentioned that you can't teach meditation in a classroom, like, but it's a, whole day-to-day activity, of course, but these two types of meditation, of course, Samatha meditation, you can teach, you have to learn it from somewhere if you want to practice. So it's a, learning process, classroom kind of practice, but it's only Samatha. But Vipassana, again, this is my idea, right? So people use this term Vipassana in different, meanings. But how I use it, the Vipassana, there only you really enter to the Lokottara Magga, the
Supramundane
path. For that, there should be, before that, pre-requirements.
Mm-hmm.
It's mentioned you have to Saddharma Shravane, you have to listen to Dhamma. Right? Without listening, or listening in the sense getting it from outside, maybe reading books or, learning the Buddha's teachings.
Mm-hmm.
So Saddharma Shravane, you must have that.
To do
then,
it properly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then only you get this Yoniso Manasikara part. So this Saddharma Shravane, I see there's a benefit that helps you to develop your own wisdom to see whether you are following the correct path or not.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if I practice like this, whether I achieve this kind of results, is there a benefit like that? So, it's known as Sammaditti. So when you listen and understand Dhamma, what you get is the Sammaditti, the right view.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get right view, I'm talking about this Lokottara right view. Worldly level also there's a right view. But Lokottara side, if you get right view, then you are the person, developing your path. No one else can teach you. So, in my way, I can't teach real Vipassana. We can give
mm-hmm.
guidelines only. So, it's the person listening.
So,
to
understand you provide
it
guidance.
And
mm-hmm.
get a knowledge about the path leading to Nibbana.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's up to the person practicing it.
To steer his own ship. Or
that's right.
Okay.
So, in other words, you are not supposed to depend on the teacher in real Vipassana. But Samatha, of course, better to have a teacher, right? but certain people they can practice, but at least to learn it and different, you know, sometimes you need help. But this is only for those who see Dhamma, right? Get Sammaditti.
Now, do you happen to say, sir, now you do not need a teacher to practice Vipassana?
Once you get the Sammaditti. But until then, of course, you have to search.
How do you know whether you have got the Sammaditti?
Well, it's your... of course,
what do you mean
Buddha's
by
advice is you can compare it with the Dhamma and Vinaya. And also, you can check with your own experience and even you can discuss with non-persons, right? There are different ways, but finally you have to compare it with Dhamma and see whether it is matching. Mm-hmm. Right? So, but when you get this Sammaditti, of course, you don't have to check it even, because you see a clear difference between worldly path and the supramundane path. You see the real difference. So it's a kind of, you know, clear cut. That is Sammaditti. It's a kind of knowledge you are gaining.
Yes, the foreigners, the tourists who come to you, most probably, they do not know anything about Samatha and Vipassana. In that sense, how do you describe meditation to them?
It is sometimes better not to know some of these terminologies.
Okay.
Because otherwise you get hooked on to these terms, you know. This is one of the problems that the Buddhists are facing, because it's a word and you get stuck with the word. You get stuck with the meaning, the open meaning of the word, but you don't see in depth. So in order to deal with them, it is much better, because one of the thing is that language itself is created to describe the normal model of life. No, it's me and my life and my life story. That is what the language describes. That is what the language is capable of doing. Mm-hmm. But when you have to speak about something beyond the language, and that is what Lokottara is all about, because it is beyond everything.
Yeah.
It's beyond everything. And so it is not describable except for it being only experiential. So it can be experiential, but it may not be something that you can describe through language in the same manner that you teach people how to do things. So the approach that is taken is that I don't use these terminologies which may impose some kind of an attempt to convert, you know. It's I don't want them to get the impression that, you know, you are trying to forcibly push something.
Which is important.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, at the end, when it comes to the question and answers after the session, it is an opportunity for you to use some of the similes, metaphors that Lord Buddha has mentioned in so many places. So, that approach works brilliantly, because there is no kind of... Now, although we are saying Buddhism is philosophy and you don't need to believe it is experiential, if you look at most of the things that are happening in the name of Buddhism, it's always based on some kind of a belief, and that also becomes a preventive factor, you know, for you to move on through the right path. So therefore they have the better advantage of not knowing Dhamma as a subject. So there is.
So they are more open-minded. That's what you are trying to say.
They are very open, because then only, you know, you can ask this sincere question from yourself.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, there is a tendency for people to use the Buddhism just to add a label. You know, I am a Buddhist because I do these things, and therefore I am a Buddhist. Here, it's not an ism. You know, Buddhism is actually it's not another ism, and that itself is wrong. You know, you to call. So that's the way to move on with the, particularly with the outside world.
Professor, is there anything you would like to add to
it? Yes, even I used to teach foreigners the meditation. So initially,
when you were overseas, I suppose.
That's okay. Right. Yeah, the Samatha meditation. It's a common thing. Like we are talking about, you know, how to develop your samadhi. So as Vipula mentioned, you can't describe it in you know, using a language what samadhi is, but when you really experience it, then only you realize what it is. Even you try to explain it in different ways, you can't give the real idea. So that is the exact thing. You have to experience something. So what we are doing is we guide them to gain that experience. So when you gain that experience, of course you don't need terms for that. So especially in Samatha meditation, for example, how to develop your concentration or one-pointedness. So there are certain techniques. So we can explain the technique. You try this and see. And it's the experience you are getting. After experience, sometimes you can mention the terms and this, that, and so on. Mention that. So if you start with, you know, teaching those terms, they may not like it. So my approach is also first practically teach them, allow them to practice. For that you don't need, especially the Samatha meditation, you don't need any terms.
So language, of course, is sort of a barrier sometimes to give the correct picture of things.
That's right, but of course, but we can't do it without language as well.
Yeah.
So you can't, you know, completely avoid that. We have to explain something. No? For that, we have to use.
And since we have just a couple of minutes, I would like to ask Mr. Vipula Manicksekara. I think maybe it is something personal, but maybe it's important to all our viewers out there. So what are your future tasks in Buddhist activities?
Yes, as you know, I started conducting these meditation sessions for tourists about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I have surpassed, I think, 110 sessions by now.
Okay.
And if you count the numbers, average 25 into that, I think it gives the number.
Yeah.
So I'm happy that you're offering the most precious gift that Sri Lanka has to the world in some way, you know, in my own way. And to that extent, I'm quite happy. And I would also like to share with the other Buddhists in the country who are also, you know, spiritual seekers, that there are many, many stanzas and, you know, sutras, and where you can, something that strikes you, just go after it and see whether there is an understanding. I remember way back, you know, Mr. Alec Robertson, when I was listening to him, I was in my 20s, he said there is no thinker behind the thought. I think language will never explain that, you know, that kind of a thing. So it took a long time for me to sort of grasp what he said, you know. So I suppose with that, you know, combination, you know, you are adapting yourself, at the same time you're offering it to the others. And that is the task that I have for the future.
Yeah. Prof. Ravi, would you like to say something to the viewers? We have just 1 minute.
Yes.
You can use a few seconds of it.
Yes, of course. I'm talking to those who are really into this, those, you know, really want to get something from
practicing
the Buddhism,
it.
Practicing it. Identify this clear difference between Samatha and Vipassana. So when you are into real Vipassana, only you see what really Buddha taught or his intention was. In Samatha meditation, of course, there are benefits. So we have to practice it. But
temporary.
Temporary.
Yeah.
Even you can go up to Brahma worlds, but not to, you know, end this samsaric journey. We should take the advantage, because we got the opportunity of listening to Buddhism. right? So we are so lucky. And so don't waste this precious time we got.
I would like to take that as an ending note. This is something precious that you have got. So do not waste it. Act now itself. So thanking these two gentlemen, Professor Ravi Koggalage and Mr. Vipula Vanikasekara, on behalf of all our viewers. And thank you so much, viewers, for joining us. And let us meet the next Monday with another fruitful program. And please, I'm sure you have comments on our program or maybe questions. So please write to us. The producer, Dhammahadaya, the Buddhist TV, R.G. Senanayaka Mavata, Colombo 7. Thank you so much. May the most noble Triple Gem bless you.